You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
I should put a mask on because I don't want to catch when the Columbus crew caught in Hartford, Connecticut. It's another edition of the Massive Report podcast. Patrick Murphy's here, Bart Logan, Alex Stanek, and welcome Andrew Atkins, host of the Crew Review, which hits MassiveReport.com immediately after crew games and is a first reaction to what we've seen. And just like this broadcast, if you will, it's been a long time, Andrew, since we've had a game like this to talk about. It almost gives you more content, doesn't it?
It really does. You know, you can only say we are going to win the MLS Cup so many weeks in a row before it starts getting old. So having something to complain about, at least it kept it fresh.
Well, we'll get back to you here in a second because I understand I didn't get a chance to listen yet. But I understand that you are taking a very frightening look at this team and wondering if they're really worthy of tops in the Eastern Conference. And we may have shown ourselves a little bit last night. We'll see. Patrick, we'll get to that here in a few moments. And I want to kind of plant this seed since you are the tactical guy and also plugged into the club on a coverage basis. But, I mean, it had to have been Toronto's radical tactical changes at halftime that led to what we saw after the 45th minute. So we'll get to that here in a few minutes. But, you know, Alex, we should talk about a game that was so bad last night that I forgot about the Minnesota game last week where we won 2-1 and Pedro and Lucas were simpatico in linking up with one another. It was a beautiful thing to see. What do you remember about that game? Because it was so long ago now.
I remember that we won and we played solid defense, and I, in general, felt better about that game than I did about the one that we just witnessed. I don't think that we missed Nagby quite as much as we did.
Agreed. And we'll get to that because I kind of want to weigh how much we missed Nagby last night because I was thinking to myself, and I'm sure I was yelling it out loud, Nagby, where are you? I think we really missed him last night, and it wasn't so evident in the Minnesota game, was it, Bart?
No, absolutely not. And I think it's partially because you saw probably, you know, one of the, if not the best performance out of Pedro Santos in the black and gold is he's had since he's come to this team. He was terrific, you know, finding Lucas El Rayon on that beautiful 17 pass buildup on that opening goal. And then, of course, you know, that absolutely ridiculous, audacious goal that he scored from a, you know, impossible angle. And I mean, he was just clicking on all cylinders. He and Lucas were playing off each other as well, as you've seen all season. You know, Jossie Zardes doing a good job attracting, you know, attention and creating openings for other players to get involved. I thought it was a really strong performance from the team. They did, though, start, you know, with the exception of obviously the missed PK, and you know, we could probably talk a bit more. Maybe it's not just the South End. Maybe it's just Argentinian tens that shouldn't be taking those for Columbus. But I do think you did also see a couple of – I mean, you started to see this team unravel a bit defensively in the end of that game against Minnesota. Remember, you know, it was – we had to get a little bit of luck. The soccer gods were on our side to come out of that with all 3 points. It could have very well – you know, they could have been staring at a draw. So there were some troubling signs even with that win. But it all seemed to come apart there in East Hartford in that second of the week. And I think you're also starting to see that too, just a lot of games under these guys' belt.
Yeah, agreed. You know, we've talked about how we feel like we have a deep bench, but the games are piling up. And you definitely have to look at which team has more energy when it comes to the second half. Certainly last night, Toronto had more energy. And really at the end of the match on Wednesday, I felt, Patrick, that Minnesota did. they all of a sudden seemed to start playing there at the end and made it kind of dicey, didn't they?
For sure. You saw, I think it was an 88th minute goal, and then the ball was in the net again in stoppage time. Obviously, that's what Bart was referring to with the offside. I do think that we should also point out the Crew hit the crossbar or the post. Zellerayan did in that second half. Obviously, you had the goal from Pedro. So it wasn't a complete, you know, meltdown like we saw last night. They had their moments where they were still positive offensively. You know, I thought that Sebastian Berhalter, when he came in for Fatai Alashe, who was obviously replacing Darlington Nagbe, played well. I also thought Artur played about as good of a game as he's played since his first season with the Crew. And Caleb Porter said after that game, you know, he did the job of two people kind of running that midfield, both offensively and defensively. I didn't think he was, and we'll get into the Toronto game more, but he just wasn't able to replicate that great performance. And you know, I think this defense, as good as they've been, let's be honest, it wasn't going to stay on this, I think, 0.31 goals per game or whatever they were at. You know, there were going to be games where they just don't look as good. Now you hope that it doesn't result in, you know, three goals conceded like we saw last night, but there were going to be slip-ups. And that's kind of what I attributed the Minnesota game to, was, hey, it just wasn't the perfect night that we've kind of gotten used to. And that's a Minnesota team with some pretty solid attackers as well. Lod, we talked about going in. Obviously, Crew fans are familiar with Kai Kamara. He was decent, having not practiced with his team hardly at all. So, you know, that's a decent attack despite what they were missing elsewhere. And, you know, I'm not sure I'm ready to jump off the bandwagon on the Crew defense just because it was two less than ideal performances.
No, certainly. We're not going to do that. And Andrew, you know, in sports these days, analytics are so important. And they talk about regression, either positive or negative regression. And you look at the Crew, as Patrick mentioned, their goals against average, ridiculously low. And some of that has to do with just plain old luck. And sooner or later, things are going to kind of even out. So maybe that's a factor that we should look at, that the, you know, as solid defensively as we've been, maybe we have been a little lucky.
I think you can't take away from the defensive start we had, no matter how you slice and dice it, because we are playing a professional soccer league. And at the end of the day, we were barely allowing goals to be scored against us. But I think if you look at the clubs that we have played for the majority of the first half of the season, you see a trend in that we play a lot of clubs that struggle to find the back of the net. We play Atlanta, we play Chicago, we play FC Cincinnati, we play teams that are below the 500 mark. And we have begun to step outside of that and play some tougher teams. And we had results against better teams. We beat Philadelphia Union. We had a tie against the Seattle Sounders. But I'm talking primarily recently, we had two back-to-back tough games against Minnesota United, who, granted, are missing several key players. So we did pull out a 2-1 result against them, but we pulled out a 2-1 result against a team that's missing a lot of their key players as well. And I think, not to jump too far ahead, but I think the breakdown we saw at the end of the Minnesota game, where we almost lost that lead and almost tied it 2-2, I think we actually saw that progress into the Toronto game. I think it was a solid progression of us kind of feeling that weight and feeling the pressure of playing against potentially playoff caliber teams back-to-back, two games in a row. And I'm not saying throw in the towel on the season, but I am saying it's good that we're getting tested at this point, because now we can adjust. Now we can look into the playoffs and see what we really have coming up against us.
Yeah, that's a good point. And none of us, I don't think, are throwing in the towel. Not even Alex, who comes up with some crazy ideas sometimes. Bart, I forgot what I was going to say to you, Bart. So I'm going to throw it to you, Alex. How depressed were you at the end of that game?
The Minnesota game or the Toronto game?
No, the Toronto game, because I want to jump into the Toronto game. I feel like there's more to break down with the Toronto game, and it's fresh in our minds. I mean, were you alarmed?
Yeah, I mean, so Toronto's a very good team, first of all. So I wasn't necessarily alarmed. It was definitely a good wake-up call that, you know, we're not going to never lose again, right? There are other teams that can go toe-to-toe with the Crew, and I think we saw that. I thought Jozy Altidore had a very good game. I thought it was, you know, one of the only good performances that he's put in a while. Well, you made that comment after he already scored, though. So you get half points for that one, Murph.
He had no business playing the second half. He should have been gone at the end of the first.
Hey, that's what I wanted to get into.
Yeah.
Was that he was sitting on a yellow card. He gets called for a rough challenge and then kicks the ball away. That should be a second yellow. Mm-hmm. Are we in agreement? Bart, are we in agreement on that?
Absolutely. And I mean, you could see the ref processing it and, you know, instinctively thinking that reaching for the L, maybe not literally reaching for it, but, you know, instinctively going to that and then realizing, wait, he's already on yellow. That's going to mean he's a red. It's Jozy Altidore. They're going to be down the entire, you know, an entire other half. I don't know if I want to affect the game's outcome like that. Which is not what you're supposed to be doing. As you go with a yellow is a yellow, regardless of who, you know, who caused it, whenever they did it. He shouldn't. And you know, we don't want to. You've got to deal with adversity. This Columbus, you know, that's not an excuse for the way they melted down in the second half. No. But they should have been up a man. I mean, and Jozy Altidore was the catalyst for that first goal. And momentum is thing too.
He that was his second yellow, but this is Major League Soccer, and players like Jozy Altidore get three yellows at least, sometimes four, depending on if they play for LAFC or not. So
it wasn't the foul itself. I could live, Patrick, I could live with that not being the second yellow. But the kicking the ball away, that's Bush League, and he should have been run for that. Am I wrong here?
You're not wrong. I just think that kicking the ball away happens a lot. Guys do it
not like that
all the time.
You know, and he was
you know who does it a lot? Milton Valenzuela. He'll often commit a foul and then pick up the ball and then just toss it over the guy's head. He does it all the time. And that's a yellow card.
He kicked the ball 40 yards down the touchline.
I get that it's the rule. I understand, and I understand the frustration. I just think, you know, if you're going to send a guy off, and this plays to what Bart's saying, and I think this probably went through the referee's mind. My point is, I don't think it had to do with it being Jozy Altidore. I think referees are aware, if you're going to send a guy off and then he misses the next game and he gets a fine, you want to do it for something that really deserves it, right? Now, there was the foul earlier, I think it was earlier, where they thought maybe it was an elbow, and they went back and showed the replay. Now, if he hits him with an elbow there, I think he's gone. But they, you know, that's the type of thing where I think, all right, give him the second yellow card, send him off. You know, by the letter of the law, you're right. He probably should have been off. He kicked the ball away. But I think it's just harsh to send a guy off and everything that comes with that when, you know, he just kicks the ball away in frustration. The first yellow for sure. And I know that that's not the rule, but.
Okay. Well, we have to accept the fact that he was still in the match. And shortly thereafter, we saw him withdraw himself from the box, and he scored his goal from the top of the box. And this, I think this is something that we talked about before a podcast a few weeks ago, Patrick, after one of the Chicago games, that I was concerned at all the space we were surrendering just outside of the 18. And we saw it again last night in the second half. And that wasn't the whole deal. I mean, the right side with Larea was the biggest factor in the second half. But walk us through, Patrick, if you could, what Toronto did tactically coming out of the locker room in the second half that made obviously a huge difference in the outcome for them.
Well, the first thing is that Toronto lined up in I think a formation that not only the Crew didn't really expect, but Toronto wasn't entirely comfortable in. And I think you saw that in the first half. If Jozy was up top by himself, Akinola, who we talked about last week and for what he did down in Orlando playing up top when Altidore was out on the right wing. And it just didn't work. They were having all sorts of issues. Piatti, who's played on the right more often than not, was on the left, and they just weren't able to keep possession. And so they made a switch at halftime. They put Akinola up top. They went back to kind of a diamond midfield with Piatti on the right. And you then saw Josie able to withdraw, as you mentioned, a little bit more to kind of create space. You know, Josh Williams and Jonathan Mensah were able to keep him in check in the first half. But he had to stay up top. He was the lone forward. Now they have another forward up top. He can float a little bit more, work off of Pozuelo. And that's exactly what happened on that first goal. You know, he found pockets and was able to create space. And I do think, and I'm glad you pointed out, because I was going to mention that you mentioned that a couple weeks ago. I asked Jonathan Mensah after the game, you know, what happened on the goal. And he gave the general post-game response of, you know, we'll have to go back and look at it, and that'll be something we address. I think there needs to be a very defined role here of who handles those guys in between. Because, you know, you've got your two central midfielders and you've got your center backs. Well, whose job is it? Do you want center backs stepping that high and potentially leaving space in behind? Or do you want one of the central midfielders to drop if there's somebody in that space? And obviously it's hard to recognize in the moment, things are happening quickly, but you know, good defensive teams, and we believe the Crew is a good defensive team, generally don't do that, especially a second time. And it happens again on the second goal. You know, obviously it's a little bit of a different play, but still coming from the right, that pocket of space between the midfielders and defenders. And, you know, they just weren't on. The clicking that we've seen just wasn't there last night. And, you know, I think this is a big learning moment for this team. And hey, this is, you know, this is a spot we can't have be a problem for us going forward.
Andrew, Richie Larea, who was cast aside by Orlando, it's no wonder they've never been in the playoffs if they're going to let a guy like that go. He was a nightmare last night. And we didn't seem to have anybody that could close him down. That's got to be a cause for concern.
I think what Richie Larea did is he went back and he watched tapes from the Chicago match and realized that apparently if you go through the right side of the pitch, you can get in pretty unopposed, because that was what had happened in both the goals against us with Chicago. They came in from the right side of the field, and that was what happened with all three goals from Toronto. I don't know what was happening with Valenzuela, with Williams, that side of the pitch, but they were very similar goals to me. I mean, the finishes were different. They dropped back and they shot him from outside the 18, but the approach was very similar to what we saw in Chicago and how they broke down the Crew's defense. So I think that's something that needs addressed, and we're going to have to look at moving forward is what's happening. Why are guys able to get in through the right side and come in pretty unopposed? And to go back to what Murph was saying about our defense, something that really surprised me is I've seen this team and this defense go in with almost reckless abandon. Every player on the pitch, if the opposing team has the ball, they're getting a body part in the way. They are getting their head in the way, no matter what the danger is, no matter what pain may come from that. It's a defense with a reckless abandon. And I remember watching Larea just dribble past Valenzuela, dribble past Pedro Santos, and neither of them even looked like they attempted to make a tackle. And it was alarming. It didn't look like the same defense we had seen start a historical season. So something went wrong with our defense. I'm not an expert. I can't put my finger on it, but
I think part of it there, at least on the second, you've got, I was just watching a replay, and it looks like Josh Williams is pointing to Sebastian Berhalter to take the top of the box, a couple Toronto players that are lurking up there. And Berhalter, there's a miscommunication there, thinks that he's telling him to grab the ball carrier. That draws him down. You got two guys there open at the top of the box. And I think that just, you know, illustrates again a Darlington Nagbe in there, or even a Fataya Lache, a guy who's, you know, got a little bit more experience in the MLS game. That's just, I mean, it's a rookie mistake there from Berhalter. He was subbed off, you know, shortly afterwards. That's probably not, you know, much of a coincidence. I don't think it's something you hold against him. It's something that he hopefully learns from and is, you know, Greg Berhalter's son. I think he definitely does learn from, but that's, I think that's, you know, kind of the cost of doing business against a good team. And again, with this depth really being stretched right now with all these games and the injuries starting to pick up.
And really fast, I saw Pat's hand up. But just about Sebastian Berhalter, he's a third-string MLS rookie mm-hmm. right now, and he has had to play the majority of the minutes in our two probably toughest matches this year. So, yeah, I mean, you feel the lack of Nagby there. Sorry, Pat. Go.
No, you're fine. I think that those are both good points. I think when you play a rookie, you're going to get, regardless of how talented, you're going to get the mistakes. And I think Bart illustrated that well if you go back and watch that goal. But going back to the left side of the Crew defense, it's interesting to me because I think Pedro Santos does a good job defensively normally, and Milton Valenzuela has been very good for the most part this season. You know, I think that is probably the place where I wonder, you know, the tired legs, if that came in. And even though Milton didn't start the game, obviously he's played a lot of minutes of late. You know, I don't want to blame that, and Caleb Porter didn't want to blame that after the game. He pointed out that Toronto has played the same schedule. They played on Wednesday and last Saturday as well. So, you know, they brought a lot of energy in the second half, not as much in the first half, which I think, you know, maybe the Crew should take more advantage of. But I wonder if just on especially that last goal where Larea just dribbles through, he goes by, I believe it was Valenzuela first, Santos and maybe Santos next, and then Josh Williams doesn't step quite quickly enough. You know, that I think is probably just mental fatigue. You know, you're down 2-1. You've given up a lead, and you know you're just tired. Is that acceptable? No. You know, this team wants to be one of the best teams in MLS. You can't have mistakes like that. But I do think that there's more of a reason maybe than an excuse there. And you know, it just has to be cleaned up. The matches, despite having a little bit of a break here, they're not going to get any easier. October is probably the toughest month that I can remember seeing on a Crew schedule in terms of match congestion in a long time.
I don't think we've seen anything like this. And perhaps speaking to the fatigue, you know, I was watching the first half last night and I tweeted that the Crew were presenting a TED talk on team soccer. They looked so connected through the whole pitch. They were coming out of the back so crisply. And that's why the second half was so shocking, because I felt as good as I have at any point at halftime during the entire season after that. I don't know, but were any of you seeing something in the first half that, you know, my rose-colored glasses, I wasn't seeing that would give us cause for concern? Because when they walked off the field at 45 minutes, I was like, we got this. This, we look so good tonight. Am I missing something? Anyone? Help?
You know, I don't think so. I think they looked like we expected them to in the first half. You know, like they've played most of the season. I think the second half was really more Toronto. I think they, you know, were positive in the locker room. I think they knew that what they put on the field in that first half wasn't good enough. I think they also probably gained some motivation from the fact that, hey, this is a Crew team that's kind of taken our spot at the top of the East. And, you know, this is our chance to prove something. You know, I think in that situation, you can dig a little deeper. And I do think the tactical adjustment was big by Greg Vanney. I think that, you know, the Crew just didn't have an answer to that. And, you know, we can blame Caleb Porter. You can blame the players on the field. But I think sometimes you just tip your hat to the other team and say, hey, you guys, you know, outplayed us. I think the Crew played their normal game in the first half, and Toronto didn't handle that well. But once Toronto kind of kicked them in the teeth a little bit, the Crew didn't have the fight back that they normally do.
The adjustments are really key. I think the fatigue plus the tactical adjustments. I mean, we got outplayed and we got outcoached in the second half. It was not great. But you know, I don't think it's any reason for Crew fans to kind of hit the panic button. I mean, we're still top of the league for the most part. So, you know, there's still a little bit of room to make mistakes.
Yeah, it's professional sports. I mean, the Crew still have two losses on the season and 14 games. That's incredible. So it's going to happen. A team's going to stumble every once in a while. You see it. And you know, sometimes when a team is as good as the Columbus Crew is this year, maybe the team starts to believe their own hype a little bit. And it's good sometimes to be humbled. And it's good to be humbled in the middle of the season instead of in the playoffs. So I'll take a humbling. Unfortunately, it was against Toronto, who I don't want to see us lose to ever. No. But I think when we see the crew take the pitch next time, you're going to see a very motivated crew.
How much, though, and we talked about this at the jump, that we didn't miss Nagby as much as we did last night. And I felt like he would have been uniquely qualified to release some of that pressure by carrying the ball by himself.
You speak out of for harm's yourself. Way, you I've know? Never stopped missing Nagby.
Well, no, yeah. I mean, you're right. I miss him every game, but we didn't miss him more than we did last night. I mean, when you see the breakdown and guys chasing their tails in front of the goal, that's where you miss Nagby in that cool, calm way that he possesses the ball. He carries it out by himself. You know, he's a self-contained weapon, if you will, on the defensive end. And there aren't many guys in the league like that, let alone on this team. Is there anyone that we feel like can fulfill that role better than what we saw last night?
I don't think so. I think you're just going to have to do it. I mean, I think you're, you know, the best chance you've got is Artur stepping up as yeah. he has, I think, on the whole since Nagby's injury. But, you know, he's finding himself playing, you know, all the minutes now up there along with Jonathan Mensah. I don't think Greg Berhalter, although he's, you know, demonstrated he's putting, you know, a lot of trust in Sebastian Berhalter. Obviously, Fataya Lashi is a guy that, you know, he's getting the time. But Artur is that consistent variable, and you don't see Caleb Porter seems to be too eager to get both of those guys out, Fataya Lashi and Berhalter or Morris out there together without Artur. So I think that's the closest thing you're going to get. And Artur's putting in a string of strong performances, but I think last, you know, again, Sunday just really showed there's still a gap in quality between them. And I think the real difference is that consistency that Nagby seems to give you game in and game out. He's always going to be that for you.
Yeah. And I would be interested in seeing Boateng potentially kind of try to slot in there instead of Berhalter. I think Berhalter.
Has he played in the middle before?
I think he did some of the time, right?
I don't know. I haven't followed his career that closely.
All right, well.
It'd be an interesting one.
Well, and real quick, I think it should be pointed out, and we talked preseason, early season, about the lack of depth at this position, and I think it's been better, and credit them going out and getting Fataya Lashi. I think it's been better than we expected. But I think when you have a player like Darlington Nagby, especially at a position like that in the central midfield, on any MLS team, you lose him for an extended period of time, you're going to be worse. And I think that's just the case, you know, when, you know, Michael Bradley isn't the player he used to be, but when he used to be missed games for Toronto, their midfield wasn't as good. When Nagby was in Portland or in Atlanta, they suffered when he wasn't on the field. There's plenty of guys in this league. This league just doesn't have the depth that maybe you do in other leagues to replace a guy as good as that with the same level. Now you can bring in an Alache who can be serviceable, and we've seen that. But when you play a good team like Toronto, you want your best players on the field. It's unfortunate of the timing of this. What you hope for, I think, is that Nagby gets back sooner rather than later, 100%, and is able to make it through the rest of the season, because you're going to see some more tough games coming up. And obviously you want him, Zellerayan, all of these pieces in place for the playoffs.
So, Patrick, what's the timetable on Nagby? Do we know?
They originally said 2 to 3 weeks, and that was after the Cincinnati game at home, I believe. So, you know, we're coming up on that. With everything that happened, there wasn't time to ask Caleb about Nagby. You know, there were plenty of questions to be asked without that. So we'll get more of an update when we talk to them, I think, Thursday. But I would imagine, you know, I haven't heard anything about any sort of setbacks. I would imagine that you're looking at, you know, here in some of these next games, you know, maybe misses the Dallas game and can come in after that. But it sounds like he shouldn't be out too much longer.
And Brian, I don't mean to step on your hosting shoes, but I have a question for the group, because the thing about Nagby being missing is I feel like our entire play style has changed without him. I feel like that patience and waiting for the perfect attack play style that we've seen through the first majority of the season, when he's not there, I don't think we have that same play style. I think some of our goals are just more luck than anything, like we saw against Toronto. So I think Nagby being out has completely shifted our play style. And my question, I actually asked it on my show, but I want to get your opinion. Is there another player on the Crew that we would lose to injury that would have more of an impact than losing Darlington Nagby's had?
Jonathan Mensah.
That would be definitely one, yeah.
But I think that, because I actually had this conversation with someone last week, a little bit different, was, you know, if someone's in the running from the Crew on MLS MVP, is it Nagby or Jonathan? And the person I was talking to also threw Lucas in there. I just don't think he's played enough. But those two were the two, for me, that I think were in the conversation. And I think you've seen recently just what a difference Nagby makes. Now, fortunately, you haven't had to see the Crew defense without Jonathan, which is a good thing. But I think that's probably the one I would say is up there, at least in the conversation, as that important to this team.
I would say Zardes.
Yeah.
I feel like we're not going to get any goals if Jossie gets hurt. Like, there is nobody. Every time Jossie gets subbed out, it's cool. We're not scoring another goal this game. You know,
you'll have your Pedro goals or your Zalaria goals, but we're certainly not scoring 2 to 3 goals a game with Fernando Adi as our starting striker.
It's okay. Now we're going to watch Fernando Adi run around like a headless chicken for 20 minutes. And, you know, I don't know what I still don't know what he does or like who the other people are who are supposed to slot in there. I can't believe I'm going to say it, but I miss the days when we had like an Adam John or an Aaron Schoenfeld or someone who was serviceable off the bench for like 5 goals a season. I don't even think Adi's going to get 2. Like, is he going to get 2 goals this season?
I don't think he's going to get 1.
We keep seeing those ghosts of backup strikers pass too. It seems like every game there's or two of those guys in there.
Patrick
Minnesota,
Mullins.
They've just got the Crew bargain bin. I mean, yeah, and then yeah, Patrick Mullins. But Minnesota had Schoenfeld, Kai, of course, an injured Ethan Finley.
Yeah, I don't. I'm a bit confused why Jordan Hamilton hasn't gotten more of a look, and he's been on the bench the last few games with Adi out. And that's a guy that I really liked when he was in Toronto, speaking of Toronto. And I thought he, you know, in limited time when he came over last year, I thought he did some things. But yeah, it surprised me. He's a very different player than Zardes. So maybe that's, you know, he just doesn't fit the system as well. I don't know. That's a guy I thought would have a bit more success as, you know, a young player who could come off the bench and give you a spark than he has so far.
I completely forgot that we still have him. We just never – and we didn't see him last year either, really. It is curious.
I think he played like 3 games last year or something.
Yeah.
And at the very least, when we're playing 2 to 3 games a week right now, just to get Zardes off the pitch and rested a little bit, because God forbid something happens to Zardes and we're down to Fernando Adi as our starting striker moving into the playoffs. And I'm not trying to crap all over Adi, but I wanted – so much for him this season, and I was so excited to have him as our backup. I even said something along the lines of, we haven't seen this kind of depth since the dual Kamara days, and boy was I wrong.
Well,
if he's a somewhat young player too, Hamilton, like you got, unless, I mean, again, and I'm not seeing him in practice, but I mean, you've got to think that if you're gonna get anything out of him, you've got, these are your chances, these are the opportunities, and otherwise, then what's the point of, you know, having him on your roster if he's a young guy and you don't trust him to do anything?
Yeah, he is buried so far on this depth chart that, like I said, I just completely forgot he was on the team. Well, let's, speaking of buried, let's bury this Toronto game. It is what it is. Hopefully we'll learn from it. It was disturbing to see, but I think over the long haul, I'm going to look at this positively. And I'm going to say that we're going to learn from it. And we certainly have a lot of tape to look at. And you can see where the breakdowns were. And I'm sure they're working on fixing them as we speak, because other teams are looking at it too. and they're going to try to attack us the same way. Bart, do you think it's an advantage that now we're playing a team that we hardly ever play, or would we rather play somebody in our conference that we're familiar with? We're going to Dallas this weekend to play FC Dallas. We only play them once a year anyway. And they're kind of sitting – the whole Western Conference is kind of packed together. So I feel like just looking at the table, we don't really know a whole lot about them compared to the other teams in that conference. What do we know about Dallas? Is it good that we're playing a team we're not familiar with?
I mean, yeah, I know they lost to Atlanta, which says something. I'm a bit concerned just because I have not liked the performances that you've seen from the Crew on the road this year. That doesn't mean I'm not picking them. You'll have to tune in, wait all the way till the end to find out. This team seems to, play differently. And I know it's not, they aren't necessarily, it's not just all same day travel now. They've, eased some of those restrictions. So it's not like they're, coming on the bus or flying in the day of, that they're able to kind of get in their routines and habits. But I think it probably can't hurt, because this is, a team that hasn't seen this Columbus team and, when in doubt, when you don't have a, the Columbus well planned for, and Caleb Porter and this Crew is a lot able to dictate the game, which I think he wants to do, every time, they're able to just outpossess a team and really smother them. I don't know if that's going to be a better chance against the Western Conference opponent though.
Murph, what do we know about FC Dallas?
It's an interesting team. Bart mentioned the loss to Atlanta, but other than that, they'd won three straight before that and tied with Orlando 0-0 yesterday, I guess. So it's a team that's in decent form, beat Sporting Kansas City, beat Colorado 4-1, and won against Houston. Like you said, the Western Conference is a little hard to judge, aside from Seattle and Portland up there, kind of on their own at 24 points. Everybody's kind of within, a little group of each other between 20 and even 16, 15 points battling for those other spots in the West. Since MLS is back, I haven't watched a ton of this team. I think they have good attacking talent. I think that they are still working to find how they want to play this year completely. But I do think Dallas is always a tricky place to go. Fortunately, you're going in, early October instead of the middle of the summer. So you shouldn't have to deal with the heat and whatnot. But it just seems that's always a place that, teams, not just the Crew, have had difficulties playing for one reason or another.
I see on Alex, ESPN.com that they have a 19-year-old named Tanner Tessman, who is the godson of Clemson football coach Dabo Sweeney, if that means anything to you. They wrote a big piece on it.
Dabo, interesting. Yeah, no, I think this is going to be a tricky game. Not only do Dallas have home field advantage, but they're also one of the teams that's most used to playing in empty stadiums, so it's a big advantage for them in a COVID world. I feel okay about this, considering it's on the road. I don't know. They're okay, right?
Yeah, looking at the weather, Saturday, 80 and sun during the afternoon in Dallas. So overnight, it'll be in the 60s. That's nice considering they, a few days before, be in the 90s. So with luck out weather-wise, it's pretty much the same as here, or at least as it has been here. So I don't have to worry about that. Franco Jara is their top scorer at 5 goals, the Argentinian. A lot of Americans on this roster. I apologize, guys. I can't remember the last time I watched this team play. They're like a mystery to me. It's like I almost forgot that they exist.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that's done a really good job of using their academy, probably the best in the league in that department. I think you mentioned a number of Americans. That's why Luchi Gonzalez, their head coach, I believe he was in their he was a coach in their academy before he moved up to the first team. Somebody may correct me on that, but you know, it's a team that's really embraced the MLS, you know, kind of model of develop, you know, developing young kids. Obviously Dallas is a hotbed for youth soccer. So they've really used that to their advantage. And, you know, for a major market in terms of, you know, the US and city wise, they've kind of embraced the smaller market attitude of MLS. They don't spend crazy money on players, and they've developed a lot of talent, you know, so it's a team that's changed a lot over the years. And maybe that's why you don't, you know, you're not as familiar with some of the players, but you know, I like what I've seen from them. I think it's a talented team. It's not a team that I'm, you know, overly scared of if I'm the Crew. But as Bart mentioned, this team hasn't played as well on the road as it has at home.
Well, it's astounding to me, and to speaking to their academy program, the amount of guys that are getting regular minutes that are still teenagers. We mentioned Tessman,
yeah.
10 appearances. Ricardo Pepe is 17 years old and has appeared in 11 games and started two of them and has scored two goals and notched an assist. That's pretty impressive right there. I think if you're looking for something to watch on the Dallas side, it's all these kids. So obviously their academy program is top notch. I mean, you look at contributors that aren't even 20 years old yet.
Oh yeah. And then they've got, I think Jesus Ferreira, you know, former David Ferreira's kid, former MLS MVP there. And he's a 19 year old striker. Yeah. Who's getting some starts, and you might see him there just with the rotation. I mean, Dallas is a team that, you know, and generally they've done things the right way, or the way you want to do to really have long-term sustained success, which is, again, as Pat was saying, you know, building, putting together a strong academy, and signing players that you're going to get, you know, their better years, and you're going to be able to, you know, get some, then, you know, potentially flip them for some good cash.
Well, Andrew, we pick a score every game, and we usually save Bart and Alex for last because their picks are usually just kind of off the reservation a little bit as far as, you know, picking scores and whatnot. I don't know how you pick games, but give us a score for the Dallas game.
Well, I've made a pledge to myself. I've predicted two times this year that the Crew would lose. The first one was against Minnesota in the MLS's back tournament. The second one was against Toronto last night. I'm never predicting that the Crew loses again. So I'm going with 3-0 Crew because I think we were humiliated, and I think we come out looking to prove a point. Dallas hasn't scored in two games. I think you're going to see our defense in top form against Dallas, and I think that you're going to see Jossie hungry for a goal. You're going to see the Crew playing harder than we've seen them play for a while. So I'm going 3-0 Crew.
3-0. Okay. Wow. Well, I don't know how Bart could top that, so we're not going to go to him yet. Murph?
This is an interesting one. As I just kind of touched on, I'm torn because I haven't seen the Crew put together a really good road performance, 90 minutes in a while. I think with this defense as good as it has been, if it plays more like it was before these last two games, you don't need that. You just need your defense to play strong and you can grab a goal or two. I'll say a 2-1 win for the Crew since we're, you know, being so optimistic today after the negativity of last night. But, I think this, you know, going on a road to a Western Conference team, they're going to take 2 days off to get everybody rested, so they're only going to really have 3 days to prepare this week. You know, I think this is another interesting test in what's going to be a series of these here over the next month or so.
All right, Alex?
I think it's going to be 1-1. I think we're going to give up some sort of stupid, fluky goal, and we're all going to turn off the game incredibly disappointed. I don't know. We need Nagby back so bad. And I was like not big on Nagby before the season. What a bad take, right? I was like Mr.
Add
Will
to
Trapp.
The list.
And I was like, man.
I forgot about that.
Weren't you negative on Porter too?
Oh, I'm still a little bit shaky on Porter. After that game, I was kind of like, man, Porter, I don't know, man. He got out-coached. But yeah, you know, I don't know. We nagged back yesterday, and this one could be tricky just based on the way that our midfield has been playing. I don't like what we've seen from the midfield without Nagby. It's the same problem that we had when we had Trapp, where you lose that one piece and the whole system kind of struggles. So we'll see how it goes. Hopefully I'm wrong.
Caleb got out.
I was looking at Alex for
just Caleb got out coached by a guy that has gone to 3 of the last 4 MLS Cups. I just want to point that out.
Yeah.
That's true. Sure.
It's not like they're flailing around up there. They seem to have a clue as to what they're doing.
Yep.
So that's good. You know, that's how you learn. Well, Bart, I don't know where you're going to slot in here. I mean, you're going to have to go pretty crazy at this point.
I like Andrew. I think he's not bad addition. 3-0 sounds all right. I think you know, this is a team that's going to be rested, which is going to be nice. I think it's a wise decision there from Caleb Porter to give the guys the extra day. I don't think there's too much from a film standpoint. You only have to look at, you know, one half of film against Toronto, just that second 45 minutes, learn from those mistakes and prepare otherwise. And I think you're going to see the left side come back with a vengeance. The left side of the defense. I think Milton Valenzuela finally gets his first goal of the season. He's been on he's been rapping on the doorstep a couple times. He's had a couple ambitious shots this year. I think he gets us one, his first one since his debutante goal, I believe, in his first game for the Crew. Why not? I think we're going to get a Josh Williams set piece goal too, to just that left side of the defense, central and wing back.
Are you saying that we're going to score perhaps on a corner kick? Because I continue to just be distressed by our corner kick.
Not necessarily a corner, but I think, you know, maybe another. There's, you know, a couple fouls off outside the box last time. I don't necessarily have as much faith in our corner kick abilities either, Brian.
All right, just to reiterate, what is your score?
3-0.
You're going to
agree
with Andrew. I'm all sticking
right,
to this.
Just making sure. All right, I'm going round and round about this one because, like I said, I just don't know a lot about this Dallas team. Difficult road trip. The weather will cooperate, however. Got those extra days to prepare. I'm going to say 2-1 Crew. We get up 2-0, and then we surrender another late goal that leaves us a bit unsatisfied. But overall, 2-1 win. All right, we'll go with that. All right, anything else, fellas? I know Alex wanted to take some cheap shots at Cincinnati before we left. What do you got?
Yeah, I don't think we have to take cheap shots beyond just saying it was 4-0 loss. And the Cincinnati fans are really depressed on Twitter, which is always
– Oh, yeah, read that poem that you were reading us before.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you still have that? It is kind of a poem.
So I enjoy, after Cincy losses, waiting for the blog posts to come out because they're hilarious. Like, especially the MLS. If you ever have a chance, go and wait for the official Twitter account to release, like, their post-match, because it's always the most delusional crap you'll ever read in your entire life, where they're like, yeah, we lost 4-0, but there were some real positive takeaways from the fact that we lost yet again. It's really good, but this was a fan one, and you just want me to read it?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So they put basically a list of all these different statements after the game, and I'm just going to read the list. So it says, "I wish it was fun to watch this team play. I wish I could go 30 seconds into a game thinking my local team was going to win. I wish I had confidence my favorite team could mount a comeback. Every time I see Jimmy McLaughlin on the injury report, I die a little bit. Why? Just why? We are unable to put together a full bench and have players on loan. Reggaeton left Cincinnati because he was homesick. Ben signed in Turkey. Why?" And then the final one is, "Stop caring about the fans and they'll stop caring about you." So could always be worse. Even when you lose to Toronto, absolutely could be worse. So keep the faith, through fans.
That's a tonic for the troops right there. Thank you, Alex. I appreciate that. So we make ourselves feel better at the expense of others.
One last thing I think we should address that we touched on quickly last week. Our podcast brother in here, Ori, is not here. He is celebrating his Jewish holiday. I forget which one it is off the top of
Yom
my head
Kippur.
Right now.
Yom Kippur.
There we go. He told us last week that he would be atoning for his sins. I think we should each come up with a sin that Ori is probably atoning for.
Man, I don't know that I could think of any for him. He's a straight shooter. I can't think of anything.
Being a Yankees fan.
Yeah, there's one.
Oh, there you go.
There we go.
Dang. Dang. There you go. Cleveland playing the Yankees.
Oh, yeah.
The crazy first round of the playoffs. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind Cleveland finishing off the Yankees in short order. So, yeah, that's his sin.
All right.
Being a Yankee fan. Yeah, that'll have to do.
I was going to say double homicide, but I don't know where else.
Wow. Yeah. Well, we'll ask him about that next week on another edition of the Massive Report as we will be here on Monday. Look back on Saturday's game in Dallas and a look ahead, as you mentioned, down the stretch. The matches just get tougher, but there is one with Cincinnati in there. For Andrew, and welcome. Great job, Andrew. And again,
thank you for having me.
Your crew review will stream as soon as humanly possible after the Dallas game on Saturday. So hit that up at massreport.com and get your first reactions to what went on the pitch down in Dallas. For Murph, for Bart, for Alex, I'm Brian. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week here in the Massive Report.